It is the Brett Winterble Show, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you on a, what are we, Tuesday? Wednesday? Monday? Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. 704-570-1110. I'm at my halfway point in my shift right now because I just did 3 hours. That's right, I did the double. For those of you who follow me on Twitter, you know where I was. I got called for an emergency sit-in for Dana Lash's show over at the Dana Show. Had that up on my Twitter feed. And it was a good time. It was a good time. A lot of stuff out there going on here. And here's a question for you to ponder this hour. And it's a serious question. I want to get your thoughts on this. How much of what we have in terms of the economic mess and malaise that's in front of us, how much of this do you actually pin on the presidency of Joe Biden? Do you pin on Biden himself? Do you say, okay, this guy did all this stuff and this is why we've gotten to this place? Or is it simply a matter of a lack of leadership? And I know that sounds like two weird questions, but did you really think that he's the reason why the gas prices are up? Do you really think he's the reason why the illegal immigrants are swarming the border? Is he really the reason why? Or is it that the powers that be understand very, very well that he has really limited power to accomplish anything? Are we seeing a presidency kind of stripped bare? And here's why I say this. I think this is an important point, and it's one that I think we all ought to kind of keep in our minds. What have you seen this administration do since they've been in office? Well, you've seen them arrest and severely maltreat, in some cases, the January 6th protesters and the January 6th rioters, right? Because there were protesters outside the building and there were rioters inside the building and around the building. So I acknowledge that right there. But, you know, you've had these people locked up in the D.C. city jail, and people who are congresspeople have gone to try to visit these folks. And they're saying that they are being treated in horrific conditions. Horrific conditions in Washington, D.C. You know that Merrick Garland has deployed the Department of Justice against parents who protest CRT and things like that. You know that he deployed the heavy hand of the federal government against critics, right? You saw what happened with General Milley and Lloyd Austin when they decided that they needed to reprogram the entire U.S. military because they were all white nationalists. Remember Milley talking about his white rage? And so you've got Merrick Garland deploying against parents at CRT protests. You have the January 6th situation leading to an absolute lockdown in Washington, D.C. You see these people who have been detained. Many of them haven't seen lawyers yet. They're not allowed to see their lawyers. They're not allowed to do a number of things. They're being held in pre-trial detainment, and it is now almost a year since they've been locked up, and they haven't had representation. Tucker Carlson's been covering this story for months and months. But isn't it curious? Because this is sort of the nature of this beast. If you go back to the bad old days of Bill Clinton, 92 to 2001, you remember what happened. Ellie and Gonzalez, they send the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms against the Branch Davidians. They burn the Branch Davidians down on the say-so of Janet El Reno. You see what happens with Ellie and Gonzalez, where Eric Holder oversees a late-night raid the night before Easter Sunday. They grab the kid and throw him back over the sugarcane curtain to Fidel Castro. This is a group of people, and Biden has been around for all of this. He was either in the Senate or as vice president or as president. This is a guy in Joe Biden whose administration purposely sold guns and sent guns to the Sinaloa cartel, resulting in the death of American citizens and hundreds of Mexican citizens at the hands of the drug cartels. This is a president now who was vice president when the IRS was deployed against political enemies. And the SEIU was deployed out in the streets to beat up people who disagreed with the Porculus bill and, of course, the Obamacare bill. What I'm saying is this. This is an administration that is incredibly comfortable with deploying force against American citizens. In fact, in Boston over the weekend, very little reported, Antifa was deployed to go beat up anti-vax protesters. Now, who would send Antifa out to go beat up anti-vax protesters? These weren't people waving Confederate flags. These weren't people waving come and take it flags. These weren't people doing white nationalist stuff. These were a combination of people who said, we don't want to take the vaccine. And all of a sudden, like magic, Antifa shows up and starts beating them up in the park. Who makes that phone call? Who makes that phone call to send the shock troops of the Democratic Party out to go beat people up because they want to protest the vaccines? This is a very troubling time to be living in the United States of America, to look at the picture that we're living under, because this is the telltale signs of a bully. You can say what you wanted to say about Donald Trump. You could say he was a bully. Joe Biden's administration are bullies. You want to know how you know? He talks tough about how Mitt Romney's going to put you all back in chains, and how he beat up Corn Pop and let kids play with the hairs on his legs, and he deploys the federal authority against all kinds of people now. But who doesn't he take on? He doesn't take on the Taliban. He's afraid to take on the Taliban because they have hostages. But he's afraid to take on the Taliban. Instead, he sends his nudnik general out there the Taliban are phenomenal. They're terrific. They're very, very much about business. Remember when he sent the commander of CENTCOM out to say that? We lost 13 of our best at the Abbey Gate, and Joe Biden goes to the funeral and keeps checking his watch. He doesn't talk tough to Xi, does he? About COVID or anything else for that matter. He's afraid of Xi. Doesn't talk tough to Putin. He's afraid of Putin. Putin is now draining the European economies of their natural gas that was supposed to flow into Germany and beyond. This is a telltale sign of a bully. This is a telltale sign of a bully who doesn't have any real control over the government, except to deploy the government against you. In fact, they did it. They did it to James O'Keefe on Saturday morning.
News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. So this is interesting. Late last night, your favorite California congressman, Adam Schiff, was doing an appearance on ABCNews.com platform. And here's what he says about the upcoming 2022 election, why it is you Republicans need to not get power back come that election.
Oh, absolutely. I know they'll do away with it. The former president, Donald Trump, doesn't want the investigation to go forward. Kevin McCarthy does whatever he wants. That's why Kevin McCarthy rejected a commission that would have been equally represented by Democrats and Republicans. He didn't want any investigation to go forward. So, yes, we need to make sure the investigation takes place. But we also need to make sure, in my view, that we don't allow someone like McCarthy to ever run the House.
Kevin McCarthy must be prevented from ever becoming the Speaker of the House because he will shut down the January 6th investigation. You know, it's so curious to me. This guy theoretically runs the Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff. He lacks all intelligence and he lacks all scruples. And here's the thing. He knows damn well that everything that has gone on involving the Steele dossier is nothing but a bunch of trumped up nonsense. And I'm telling you right now, read American Marxism and you'll see why. Here's the thing. You got to understand this. I was just channeling my inner Levin for a quick second there. No, we don't have to pay him when I do that. It's okay. He doesn't get a royalty. The thing is this. He knows what's coming. Do you know that Jake Sullivan has now been implicated in the Steele dossier stuff? Did you know that this Durham investigation? Jake Sullivan. You know Jake Sullivan, emo boy? Remember emo boy? He's the national security advisor. He's the guy that stands there with the big giant eyes and the narrow face and goes, I don't know what's going to happen with the Taliban. Can I ask my dad? My dad will tell me and then I'll let you know what's happening with the Taliban takeover of Kabul. He's a terrible human being. He was somebody who helped to funnel Steele dossier stuff to Hillary Clinton when she was running back in 2016. Jake Sullivan works for Joe Biden. Expect Jake Sullivan to get a perp walked. It'll never happen. But a man can dream. But Adam Schiff comes out and he says, we can't have the Republicans take over the House because they'll shut down the January 6th investigation. You understand that if the Republicans take over the House, they won't take over the House until 2023. It'll be January of 2023. How long does Adam Schiff, does Shifty Schiff, expect that he's going to carry on this investigation? Well, what is going on here with this guy? And by the way, this guy is compromised. Remember, he took the phone call from the Russians who said,
yes, hello, Mr. Schiff, we have pictures of Donald Trump naked. Would you like some naked pictures of Donald Trump?
And you hear Adam Schiff go, well, absolutely. Can I get them life-sized? That would be great. Can you FedEx them to my beach house in Miami? No, it's this guy is a cretin. And I don't mean that as like a national, like I'm not describing Crete, like the island of Crete in the Mediterranean. I'm talking about Adam Schiff is bad news. Remember this if you remember nothing else. Every time you see Adam Schiff on television trying to tell you how dangerous Trump people are, how dangerous McCarthy is, or how dangerous anybody else is, you got to ask Adam Schiff, how many people did you allow to die as a result of the COVID when you distracted the Congress and the Senate for a solid month at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic? Because it's what you did. You never held a single hearing in the Intelligence Committee into the CCP virus. You never did it, not one time. Why? You've never done a hearing publicly about what it is the Chinese Wuhan Virology Lab did that brought this menace to so many countries around the world. You've never asked those questions, but you want to talk exclusively about J6. And before you talked about J6, you wanted to talk exclusively about Vindman and Ukraine. And before that, you wanted to talk about the dossier, and you wanted to talk about Mueller and all of that sort of stuff. This guy is a one-man wrecking ball. And he's taken the wrecking ball to the apparatus of security in the United States of America. And he has encouraged what I contend is the original insurrection. Hillary Clinton and the media call what Trump said about the election of Joe Biden. And I'm with you. I believe Joe Biden won the election. He is the president of the United States. You own all of this, folks. I'm not going to deny you that for a moment. What he's responsible for, though, is the biggest lie. As Hillary Clinton marched around the world telling everybody that Donald Trump stole the election from her and that he wasn't the president of the United States. That was the biggest lie of them all. And none of them have been held to account. And what is going to be so fantastic to watch this thing unfold with Durham is knowing that Hillary Clinton may end up with bracelets on her wrists because she is the ultimate governing authority when it came to green lighting what it was that these weirdos put together with this dossier. All made up out of whole cloth. Shoes are dropping everywhere. Shoes are dropping everywhere. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. On Twitter at Winterbull Show, and of course at the Brett Winterbull Show Facebook page, where you can read this article that I posted up out of Front Page Magazine. I'm actually shocked that they haven't taken it down yet. It is about the about this organization out of the UK. It's based in the United States. It is the organization that battles digital hate, and it's this weird story. This organization has sort of deputized itself as being the people who cut through the lies of climate change and all this kind of stuff. I posted it up over at my Facebook page, and I posted it under the title "Know Your Censors." Know Your Censors. I mean, it's pretty freaky. It goes like this: so you have this group of people who are behind most of the censorship efforts that take place in big tech and at news outlets. After campaigns to censor election misinformation and medical misinformation, meaning the vaccines, the latest wave of censorship campaign now calls for banning climate misinformation from the internet. The Center for Countering Digital Hate warns of the free speech threat from climate disinformation, including articles that undermine the existence or impacts of climate change or misrepresent data in ways that might erode trust in climate science experts. So these are one of the self-appointed sheriffs that go around online and then get you jacked up and get you banned and get you shut down. Big tech monopolies like Google and Facebook are already preparing censorship measures, but CCDH has provided them, that's the Center for Countering Digital Hate, with a list of censorship targets that covers much of the conservative media. So who do they want to censor? They want to censor the Washington Times. They want to censor Breitbart. They want to censor PJ Media. They want to censor Town Hall and the Western Journal. Now, their censorship pitch was picked up very quickly by the Washington Compost. If the past pattern of the CCDH report holds, Senate Democrats will use it as a prop in their latest demand that big tech companies censor conservatives and won't trouble to examine who is behind the unsigned report and suddenly influential shadowy organization that produced it. The Center for Countering Digital Hate is actually a British leftist group run by a guy named Imran Ahmed. He's a former advisor to America-hating Mayor Sadiq Khan. He's based in Washington, D.C. It's very hard to find out who it is exactly, who is in this organization, what their affiliation is, how they are funded, etc. The lack of transparency at CCDH extends to even basic staff information, which means you can't really find the people who are really behind this kind of stuff. But one senior researcher at the CCDH has done a lot of writing on her own. Sophie Wilkinson. She used to write for Vice and The Guardian. Some of the really, really well-regarded pieces of work that she's done include I Posed as a Man Online for Sex. The Dance Floor Move That's Bringing Women Together. And I Got My Feces Tested to See if It's Super Poo. Man, that's some quality. That's some quality research there, huh? Oh, there's more. She's also written things like Talk Dirty to Me, How Audio Porn is Awakening Our Sexual Fantasies. And Our Zit Squeezing Videos, The New Porn. Okay, so these are real quality people, man. These are people countering digital hate. How about countering digital decency, for goodness sakes? Every time a CCDH report drops, the media treats it as gospel while demanding that tech companies account for its accusations and then refusing to listen to contrary evidence. Not since the Steele dossier has the media been this willing to push dubious British material without even asking the most basic questions about where it's coming from and who's funding it. So this isn't one of those organizations that Facebook will suddenly, you know, cite your comment on their Facebook page, and they will then say misinformation, disinformation per the Council for Countering Digital Hate. The CCDH, as its name indicates, got started advocating censorship under the guise of fighting bigotry. Since then, it's moved to pushing censorship of medical misinformation over the coronavirus debates, and now its latest report calling for banning climate denial. How dare you? How dare you? Blah, blah, blah. The censorship targets this time include virtually the entire conservative media landscape. Ahmed and the CCDH aren't just pushing censorship to the media, though, but also to Congress. Ahmed admits that CCDH sets out to influence, quote, decision makers by using lobbyists and has got a lobbying firm that they're using with lots of green energy clients. So this is what they got going on. And this is the weird sort of dark money operations that you have no idea who they are, but they're going to stop you from getting information. Head on over to the Brett Woodable Show page. Feel free to share this. Let's find out how long it takes us to be banned. It's going to be a curious expression and a curious experiment, no doubt. News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Woodable Show. So how are you? That's great. 704-570-1110. All right, so I'm going to go here. Get ready, TJ. You ready? You got the sound ready? All right, here's what I want to share with you in the great panoply of sound out there. Now, no doubt you know about what happened with the Travis Scott concert there at Astroworld on Friday night. Well, guess what's starting to happen? That's right. Lawsuits aplenty. This is cut number 10. You have cut number 10, Tony Busby. Cut number 10, Tony Busby is a lawyer for a young man who lost his life at that concert. His name was Axel Acosta. He was 21 years old, and he lost his life that night at the concert. Cut number 10.
I think it's self-evident that this concert was planned incredibly poorly, that no regard was given to the safety of these young people at the concert, that there was no emergency response mechanism in place to help those who were in an extremist situation.
Well, the father of this young man, Axel Acosta, father's name is Edgar Acosta. He talked about what happened to his son and the great potential that was lost. Cut number 11.
He was trying to be an engineer or computer programmer because he wanted to provide for his family.
So you have a situation here now. Live Nation is facing jeopardy. Travis Scott is facing jeopardy. And now the stories coming out of this thing are just so bizarre. So you know what Drudge has up on his page right now? The devil made him do it. Was it blood sacrifice? That's some of the satanic conspiracies that are running out there on the TikTok. The TikTok. Videos of the Astroworld crowd crush that killed 8 people flooded TikTok over the weekend, but conspiracy theories have also flourished alongside the graphic footage accusing the rapper Travis Scott, who founded and performed at the festival, of orchestrating a massive satanic ritual. Quote, "This ain't a festival, it's a sacrifice," reads one comment. "The music industry is demonic and collects souls," reads another comment with 34,000 likes. Despite its absurdity, the theory has steadily gained traction with phrases such as Astroworld demonic, Astroworld Illuminati, whoa, Illuminati, and Astroworld upside down cross, trending among the other Astroworld content that's on the platform. Experts say the viral misinformation illustrates how young social media users are increasingly susceptible to fringe conspiracy theories despite their reputation as savvy digital natives. We have the stereotype of conspiracy theorists being older people on social media, but young people can in some ways be more susceptible, said Jennifer Stromer-Galley, a professor studying social media platforms at Syracuse University. I'd be studying the social media platforms at Syracuse. I sure as heck wouldn't be studying the basketball program. We know that human brains really like sensational content, TJ. Teenage brains are even more so because they're still developing, Josh. Internet users have seized on several far-fetched, quote, symbols present at the concert, including the imagery of flames and burning doves. Some TikTok users describe the stage as an inverted cross leading to hell. Others cite numerology, TJ, falsely claiming that Travis Scott and his fellow performer Drake were born 66 months and 6 days apart. Who does this? I know who does this. People that are looking to sow anger and disruption. Joseph Russo teaches a class on the anthropology of conspiracy theories. He said such wild claims bear links to QAnon. It is mutating and taking different forms. It goes back to the idea that there's a shadowy group of people who control it all. I'm going to fix this for you. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time to introduce legislation to ban conspiracy theories. I'm Brett Witterbull. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. Now the Democrats are pushing to tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as gas prices continue to spike. If that's where you ultimately end up, tapping the SPR, why don't you just drill? I'm being serious. I'm not making fun. I mean, look, they're obviously trying to come up with something that they think is a solution to the issue of a high cost of gasoline. So why wouldn't you then just say, forget it, we're going to open We're going to open the Keystone XL pipeline back up until the price of energy is cheap enough that we can figure something else out. But why don't they? They won't do that. They want to just tap the SPR. Do they understand that if you tap the SPR, that the Strategic Petroleum Reserve has hundreds of millions of gallons of gas that we stash for an emergency situation? A wartime, a disaster, the collapse of the global economy, Hunter Biden comes to town. I mean, some kind of a disaster where you've got to really handle the situation. Do they understand that, like, you're going to have to go back in and buy gas at the cost that the gas is available at? So, like, right now, gasoline is $3.42 a gallon on average across the country. 1 year ago, it was $2.11. Who was president a year ago? I forgot. So you have an increase in the price of gasoline, $1.34. What are we doing? So we're going to go and tap the SPR. You're going to pour the gas into the supply. It's going to bring the price down, you know, a couple of cents. And then you're going to have to go back out and buy that stuff and replace it. People, it's so tragic to me. And in all seriousness, it is so tragic and sad to me that, and if you want to weigh in, 704-570-1110. It is so sad to me that people do not understand basic economics, supply and demand. When you have a smaller supply and a high demand, the price goes up. All right, that's the way it works. I have the only iPhone 15. I don't think it even exists, but I have the only iPhone 15, and I will sell it to you for $81 million. Well, that's a crazy price. It's the only iPhone 15 that exists. I'll sell it to you for $81 million. Well, what's the market? $81 million. Well, what happens if a second one comes out? Well, it's probably going to drop the price of my offering you the... It'll probably become $45, $46 million. And then supply does that. That's what supply does. So when you get mad at the gas station because their gas is now $3.42, you got to understand something here. They got to cover for their next tank of gas that they got to fill in their gas station. So they can't say, well, you know what, we'll pay $2.11 a gallon for the next thing of gas. Well, you're going to get $2.11 a gallon worth of gas. You're not going to fill your tanks in the underground. So this is all about markets. And when you come in and you say, Joe Biden, crush Keystone XL pipeline. Me now in charge of economy. What mean gas price goes up? That's what it means. It means the gas price goes up because you're choking off supply. I would have thought for sure the Democrats would have known how the economy works. They engage in the underground economy constantly. Paid for girlfriends and situations and all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, come on now. There's a market for everything, but normal people need gas. People in Washington, D.C., people in New York City, people that live in cities, you don't need gas. Normal people that commute to and from work need gasoline. They need gasoline. All right? You need gasoline in your car so you can get to and from work. Do you remember when the Patriot pipeline got nuked by the hackers? Because Joe Biden hadn't given them specific directions about what they were allowed to hack in the United States until he went over and talked to Putin over in Russia. And he said to Putin, you guys can totally hack like these five sectors, but don't hack our petroleum reserve. Well, remember, the Patriot pipeline got hacked. And remember, we took calls from people who were freaking out. We took calls from a guy who had a couple of toddlers in the backseat of his car, and he was down to his last quarter tank of gas, didn't know where he was going to get the gas to go to work and get his kids to school. It is a mess, ladies and gentlemen. It is a mess. And so here we are, sitting here and looking at this situation, and we have to ask this question. What's the pathway? What does Joe Biden know about getting gasoline online? What does Ronnie Klain know about getting gasoline online? What does he know about any of this sort of stuff? Not much. Not much. Scott, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Scott?
Hey, just wanted to see if you had heard anything on the news about California Governor Gavin Newsom possibly having a reaction with the COVID booster shot.
Yeah, that's one of the rumors that's going around out there. They're saying he hasn't been seen in public since October the 27th. His wife put out a message in the last couple of days. There are people who are wondering whether or not he had a reaction to the Moderna shot. I don't have any more information than that. I've talked to my friends back in California, but they don't know what this guy's deal is.
I heard that he didn't make the trip with the rest of them overseas.
Yeah, he didn't go to Copperfield 26.
Gotcha. Hey, I love the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. I did actually talk about Gavin Newsom a lot when I was doing the Dana show. There's no meat on that bone right now because he hasn't been seen. This is not a bad thing. Like, I don't want to see Gavin Newsom. You guys, you don't. What do you guys want to see Gavin Newsom for? I don't know, who cares? The guy is an absolute menace. I mean, he's really terrible. I don't want to see anything happen to him. You know, as a human being, I'm a man of great concern. But less Gavin, more better for us. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterble Show. And I'm happy to welcome back to the program someone who I always love to catch up with, especially on the big challenging issues out there on the world stage. He is Gordon Chang. You can follow him on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang. And he joins us now on the line. Gordon, good afternoon. I appreciate you making time for us today on the program.
Well, thank you so much, Brett.
You know, I'm looking obviously at the challenges that are in front of us. And we're seeing something that I think is something we haven't seen in at least a couple of years, and that's China rising back up to a place where they really want to be very aggressive when it comes to taking on the United States. We saw that Xi Jinping's government has come out and basically said, we want as much coal as we can possibly get our hands on. Forget that COP26 summit. This is what we want. This is who we're going to be. Can you talk a little bit about this mindset that Xi has relative to challenging the rest of the world?
Yeah, certainly there's a disdain on Beijing's part for not only multilateralism, COP26, but also the Biden administration. Now, any Chinese regime is going to test a new administration in Washington. But I think that we're seeing from the Chinese propaganda that they look at what's going on, the disarray, the incoherence in American foreign policy, and they think that they can do whatever they want. So there's been a number of instances of just out-and-out Chinese arrogance. And skipping COP26, skipping the G20 Rome summit, mm-hmm. those are just two instances of China's belief that they can do whatever they want and everybody else just has to follow.
Nicholas Burns is our ambassador to China. Is he a guy that's up to that charge? I mean, my understanding is you need somebody who's got some diplomatic skills for that job, but they've also got to be firm. Has Biden picked the right guy for that job?
You know, I tend to think that the ambassador is really not that important because for recent administrations, foreign policy has just run out of the White House.
Yeah.
Nicholas Burns is a very experienced diplomat. The question is our instincts right? Probably not. His instincts, he was brought up in a time where everyone tried to accommodate China, to cooperate with it, to engage China. And that's really the wrong posture right now. We need someone who is going to defend the United States, but that's not going to be Burns' fault. That's going to be Biden's fault because Biden, in many ways, is letting the Chinese do whatever they want.
And one of those things that they've done is erect a series of model, I guess, models of our ships out in the desert in Xinjiang. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. To me, it doesn't seem like it's become a very urgent matter to most of the folks in the press. I know you watch these things very closely. Can you talk a little bit about, I know we can divine the intentions of the Chinese Communist Party and the PLA towards our Navy, but what about these full-scale models that are out there in the desert that theoretically would be bombing practice?
Yeah, this is another reminder that China is configuring its military to kill Americans, and we have a political class that refuses to recognize that. And I think that history will look back and just ask not whether the Chinese were militant, aggressive, and belligerent, They'll be there saying, why was the United States so feeble? Mm-hmm. This is not a question in my mind of Chinese aggression. It's a question of America's unwillingness to defend itself. We have many elements in this country who are pro-China, pro-Communist Party, mm-hmm. pro-business, whatever you call it. They are stepping, they're standing in the way of us defending ourselves.
Final question for you, Gordon. You're very generous with your time, as always. What is one thing that we ought to be keeping our eye on in the next coming, you know, days or a week that's developing there out of China?
I think that, you know, we got to look at the debt crisis, because mm-hmm. that could bring everything down in China. And that can drive, I think, the Chinese regime to do things which to accelerate the time frame if they believe that they've got a closing window of opportunity.
Very good of you to join us today. We certainly appreciate your analysis and your take. Follow him on Twitter, at Gordon G. Chang. We appreciate you, my friend. Safe travels, and we look forward to our next visit.
Thank you so much, Brett.
All the best. That's Gordon Chang joining us there. 704-570-1110 is our phone number to check in. Let's go out and check in with Debbie. Hello, Debbie. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Brett.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to circle back to what you were talking about with the gas prices and just say, until the American people realize that this is completely purposeful by this administration, nothing's going to improve. And we can yell and scream all we want at our congressmen and senators until they step up and do something about it, we're kind of stuck.
Yeah. I look at this situation, and nearly every one of these challenges we're facing are self-inflicted wounds. Almost every single one of them. I mean, you and I have both heard for 25 years, we can't ship our manufacturing off to China. It's going to come back to bite us. It is now coming back to bite us. The gasoline independence that we had and we took for granted a year and a half ago is now effectively gone. And we're now going begging, Debbie, to OPEC, for goodness sakes. I mean, this is absolutely absurd.
Sir, that's right. I mean, they came in day one, had an agenda,
yep.
knew what they were going to do,
yep.
and they've pretty much accomplished it. And I just don't know what we as the American people can do anymore.
Well, we're gonna have to take the control.
I fight my congressmen, I fight my senators,
yep.
and I basically get form letters back,
yep.
and they don't seem to be concerned about it. And
it's frustrating. It is frustrating.
It's frustrating. Yes, sir, it is.
I appreciate you being out there, Debbie. Safe travels, and thanks for calling in. I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Debbie checking in. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Good to be here with you. 704-570-1110. All right. Edward sent me a message. I don't know what to make of this message. He wants to know, given the shortage of turkeys, will there be the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade taking place in New York? Because we're short turkeys. Will they be able to fly one over the... What the heck? What is that? What is that? I mean, honest to... What? Because we got food shortages, we can't have a parade now? You know that's not a real turkey. You know how long you'd have to cook that thing that flies above the crowd? Whew. And it's going to be stringy, and because it's giant. I mean, it's unbelievable. 704-570-1110. As far as I know, there will be a parade. If there are no turkeys, there will be a parade. What they ought to do is throw turkeys into the crowd, but not live turkeys.
Frozen turkeys.
Let them have. You put yourself in there. Think about this. You put them behind protective netting, and you have a turkey cannon that you fire into the crowd. And, you know, everybody gets to go home with a little something, something. But I wouldn't just do turkeys. I'd shoot some turkeys into the crowd. Cans of cranberry sauce. Now, you better have some hands, man. I mean, you better have like some OBJ hands to like grab that thing, because you miss.
It's coming.
You miss it. That's damage. That is damage. That's all. You can fire sweet potatoes into the crowd.
Oh, I'm back in.
No. I'm not talking about the ones that grow in the ground. I'm talking about the ones that are in the can. You just start firing out hunks of sweet potatoes. Mmm.
Right.
Pineapple bits. Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes. Thank you for having me back on. Speaking of turkey, let's go to Jim. What a segue.
Hold on, Jim. Wait, this will not count against your time. Go ahead, get the death and murder sounder ready for this. Because okay, go ahead.
Oh no, I'm doing something honorable today for somebody who served honorably. Okay.
Oh please. Okay. Okay. We rescind that order. Got it. I've rescinded the order. Okay. Go ahead.
This is to pay the respect to the Senator Max Cleland.
Mm-hmm.
Max Cleland was a Democrat, but yet he deserves to be remembered because Max Cleland served in Georgia as a representative, but he was prior military. He was injured.
Yes, he was.
He became handicapped.
Yes, he was.
Because of his service. Yes, he was, I believe, amputee from double amputee.
In fact, he was a recipient of the Silver Star and the Bronze Star for valorous actions in combat, was also, obviously, as you mentioned, a U.S. senator, passed away today.
Yes, and he was one of the first to introduce real wide-sweeping reforms to the VA to help disabled veterans,
mm-hmm.
and also introduced legislation to build a Vietnam Memorial, as well as to look for MIAs. Search for MIAs. He did a lot of good, honorable things
mm-hmm.
while he sat as a Democrat. He was a Democrat. He served as a Democrat, and he served at a time when our government functioned mm-hmm. as a proper legislative body. So, because mm-hmm. of his contributions and his respect for the process, we have to honor him today. For even though he was from the other side of the aisle, he did great and wonderful things, and he needs to be remembered as a good American.
Injured, by the way, at Khe Sanh, by the way.
Is that right?
That's where he was injured, yes.
Yep. Oh, no kidding.
He was...
I think...
Go ahead.
A mortar round, right?
I believe he was on... On April 8th, with a month left in his tour, Cleland was ordered to set up a radio relay station on a hill. A helicopter flew him and two soldiers to the treeless top of Hill 471 east of Khe Sanh. Cleland knew some of the soldiers camped there from Operation Pegasus, told the pilot he was going to stay a while with friends. When the helicopter landed, Cleland jumped out, followed by the two soldiers. They ducked because of the rotor wash and turned to watch the liftoff. Cleland reached down to pick up a grenade that he had believed had fallen off of his flak jacket. It exploded, and the blast slammed him backwards, shredding both his legs and one arm.
Wow.
Yeah. It's David Lloyd was a Marine in a nearby mortar bunker. He rushed to the scene, took off his web belt, tied it around one of his legs to control the bleeding. Lloyd said the unnamed soldier was crying. It was mine. It was my grenade, according to Lloyd. The private had failed to take the extra precaution that experienced soldiers did when they grabbed M26 grenades from the ammo box, bend the pins or tape them in place so they couldn't accidentally dislodge. The soldier had a flak jacket full of grenades with treacherously straight pins, Lloyd said. He was a walking death trap.
Yeah. So. You know, a lot of these guys, after they see the rigors of a war, they come back and their complete outlook, just like John McCain, their outlook is a lot more different and they're less eager to engage. And a lot of the reactionary posturing that goes on in Capitol Hill. And I think that's why he chose to be a Democrat more than anything. He was just Democrat in name, and that you know, that's something that people should be mindful of, is when you see people like him, they're such great, honorable citizens. They sit in that political party because, you know, they, you know, kind of like a public defender, you know?
Right. Well, here's the thing, okay? It's one thing, be whatever party you want, but if you're going to vote for good policy, vote for good policy. Don't just be a hack. And, I mean, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, don't just be a hack that's going to do whatever it is that you're supposed to do. Do what's right for your constituents and your constituency, so... All right. Listen, this was a highly productive conversation, Jim, and I think we can shake hands and battle again tomorrow.
I will battle the disease of show killing.
Don't even utter it. See, you utter the word, you invite the phantasmo into the room, and we don't need that, Jim. We don't need that kind we don't need that kind of jazz.
I'll exercise my demon.
Go do it. Go do it. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brent Winterbull Show. Let's continue our conversation with folks out there on hold. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brett. Well, I think there's a parallel between what the Democrats are doing now and possibly between what they did in, like, 2007, 2008, as far as raising the fuel prices and changing behavior. Back then, you used to hear about $3 a gallon gas.
Right.
And above that, biodiesel made sense, you know, electric cars, hybrids. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, maybe it's $3.50 or something like that. But I think it's, you know, it's intentional that they're keeping this price here to change behavior.
So how would they? So how would they do that? Just by keeping the supply low?
Keep supply low. You know, you keep the price up, even the Keystone Pipeline. If they keep it here for long enough, people will change behavior just like they did back then. People back then sold, you know, of course it was cash for clunkers and all that stuff. But, you know, it changed behavior. There's a price point when things start to start to make sense, especially things, and then it goes towards the agenda of the Green New Deal, you know? What do you think of that concept?
Here's the problem. This is a problem, okay? Because I lived in a very extreme place when I was living out on the West Coast, and I saw how expensive gasoline got out there. Right? There was a point at which I saw it go well above, you know, $4.59 a gallon, almost $5 a gallon. People keep driving. The thing about gas prices is, I don't know what people will sacrifice that's in their lifestyle, but gas is one of those things you need, and the idea of saying, well, I'll just get rid of this car and I'll go buy an electric car or I'll do something else, that all requires a massive outlay up front. So to change behavior is a pretty tricky situation, because people have to go to work and they're going to have to pay what they got to pay.
At that same point, last time though, this happened, of course, that's when the credits came out on hybrids and things like that. I would think I think that's going to be part of the plan.
Well, the economy is going to have to be a lot stronger for people to be able to just go out there and buy cars like that. You know, I think it's a fair point, though, Jeff. I mean, I'll certainly take it under consideration. I mean, I think it's very possible. Mark is up next. Hello, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Brett.
How are you?
I got a question for you about your guest. Was it Gordon Chang?
Gordon Chang, yes, sir.
Yeah, he seemed to be, correct me if I'm wrong, he seemed to be criticizing China for, they're stating that they're going to continue to use as much coal as they want to.
Mm-hmm.
They avoided the COP26
right.
and the G20, and he seemed to indicate, or I inferred,
mm-hmm.
that meant they're evil people.
Well, he would tell you they're evil people for the government, and the government is evil for a whole lot of other reasons. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, to me, I wish we had a government that put us first.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like they're putting the Chinese first. They're telling the globalist environmentalists to basically take a hike.
Well, they are. That's true. They are. But there's an underlying issue there. They're on the verge of a financial collapse in their country with the real estate market. And so
all are.
Well, I mean, they're actually on the verge of an actual crisis.
I don't think we're far behind them. If you want to go down that route, I don't see how the valuations that for home prices can keep going the way they are.
Okay,
I mean,
let me complete the point. They're on the verge of an actual economic collapse. I know you say we are, but they are really on the verge of an actual economic collapse. So what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to make sure people have electricity and have the stuff that they need in that country. Otherwise, you're going to end up with $1.5 billion or $1.8 billion going into a revolution. I mean, that would be devastating, right, for their regime. So the least of their issue is whether or not Greta Thunberg is going to be upset about what they're doing in terms of coal. So
I don't think we're far again. I think
okay, I got you. You're right, Mark. So what's your time frame for the collapse of the United States economy? Go ahead. You seem very into this, so you tell me when it's going to be.
I don't know.
Well, then wait a minute. I just told you China's like on the verge of it. Like, we're talking weeks.
Okay, we're on the verge and a half. How does that sound?
Okay, so when? 6 months? 6 months? 8 months? When are we going to collapse?
Well, I know
we're
back
not.
In 2019, the
we're not.
Rates
we're not going to collapse.
Loaning each other money.
We're not going to collapse.
Out of whack.
We're not going to.
It hasn't been corrected.
We're not going to collapse.
And we printed $10 trillion.
We're not going to collapse.
And dump that into the economy.
We're not going to collapse.
Okay.
We're not going to collapse. Listen, dude, where do you buy your gold? You sound like one of these gold investors. I mean, come on. We're not anywhere near where China is. China is propped up. It is a corrupt regime. We may not like our government, but we're nowhere near where China is right now. No way.
Okay. I reserve the right to call you in a few months.
Yes, you call me when we collapse. You call me when we collapse and we're in the midst of a revolution. Gordon Chang, he's got his own take on these things. Gordon Chang is no like environmentalist commie by any stretch of the imagination. He's a person who doesn't like the Xi Jinping regime. He thinks Xi's a bad guy. And I agree with him being a bad guy. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hello, I'm calling because President Biden is using our children as guinea pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Giving experimental drugs to children is just a horrible idea.
Well, it is. It's a terrible idea. So you have states that are suing in this regard. You have different individuals that are suing to try to stop this from happening. And ultimately, I think the parents have the right to say what they want to say. That's their kids.
Well, a lot of the parents have been brainwashed like a lot of people have. These vaccines are not effective and they're not safe.
Yeah. No, I got you, man. We got sweeping generalization Tuesday. Are we on Tuesday or Friday yet? That's Tuesday. We got sweeping. The economy's going to collapse. Everybody's dying from the vaccine. Man, do I have to play more Adam Schiff for you? I'll play the Adam Schiff. I'm going to play you James O'Keefe. James O'Keefe got raided. You want to talk about a collapse? James O'Keefe got raided by the Fanbelt inspectors, the FBI. I'll let you hear some of that sound. Also, Bo Thompson comes by, and he's got thoughts. We're going to check in with him in the next hour and everything else that you want to talk about. I'm Brett Woodable, News Talk 1110 993 WBT. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Woodable Show. Welcome to hour number three. Later this hour, we have Bo Thompson coming by. We'll cross the stream. We'll check in with each and every one of you. 704-570-1110 is our number. So last night on the Sean Hannity show over on Fox, James O'Keefe, who you know from Project Veritas, was interviewed. Now, you may not remember this or know this. It was probably caught up in the fog of what happened with the Travis Scott concert on Friday night. But on Saturday morning, James O'Keefe from Project Veritas had his apartment raided. At issue is a supposed copy of, or a supposed, not a copy, but a supposed diary of Ashley Biden, who is Hunter Biden's sister, Joe Biden's daughter. And she is apparently somebody who's had a number of challenges very much in line with Hunter Biden's situation, addictions and things like that. And I'm not judging people. Everybody has their own cross that they bear. I mean, I don't laugh about that sort of stuff or think it's funny. But you have in Ashley Biden somebody whose diary was obtained by a third party who then went to James O'Keefe with it and said, hey, this is the diary of Ashley Biden. Now, the belief is that this was left in an apartment or a home that Ashley Biden lived in at some point, and she left the diary behind for whatever reason. I mean, who knows? So James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, comes into possession of this. And then weirdly, like magic, on Saturday morning, his apartment gets raided by like an FBI SWAT team. This is James O'Keefe, Cut 18, describing the raid.
Well, Sean, on Saturday morning, I acknowledge that, but I woke up to a pre-dawn raid banging on my door. I went to the door to answer the door, and there were 10 FBI agents with a battering ram, white blinding lights. They turned me around, handcuffed me, and threw me against the hallway. I was partially clothed in front of my neighbors. They confiscated my phone. They raided my apartment. On my phone were many of my reporter's notes, a lot of my sources unrelated to this story, and a lot of confidential donor information to our news organization, Sean. So I've heard the phrase, the process is the punishment. I didn't really understand what that meant, until this weekend. And Sean, I wouldn't wish this on any journalist.
So think about that, right? Think about this for a second, what it is that you're seeing. You're seeing a Steele dossier, which we know to be fake, phony, fraudulent. BuzzFeed never got raided. CNN never got raided when they ran those stories. You've seen behavior of people. They don't get raided, but James O'Keefe gets raided, and they take his phone with his sources and his donor list. What's the purpose of that? Is that going right over to the IRS so that they can immediately begin auditing people that donate money to Project Veritas? You may not like Project Veritas. You know, I think it's interesting from time to time. I don't use it a whole lot. I don't look at it all the time. But the idea that this guy's at his house and the FBI, 10 FBI agents, how many human traffickers, smugglers, cartel leaders did the fan belt inspectors go and round up? I'm just wondering, like, they apparently didn't do that. So his lawyer is this guy named Paul Kelly. And Sean Hannity asks him, well, what was on the search warrant? Like, what did it say that they wanted on the search warrant? And Paul Kelly tries to explain this. This is cut number 19, O'Keefe's lawyer. Go.
The search warrant has misprison of a felony, accessory after the fact, and transporting material across state lines as the basis for raiding the home of a journalist and seizing his work papers and journalist notes.
To find the diary? Well, here's the crazy story about the diary. James O'Keefe and his lawyer went to go turn it in. They gave it over to law enforcement. He doesn't have the diary. They gave it over to law enforcement, who's in possession of it. So why does House get raided? Why would he get raided for that? It's a weird story. But remember what I said in the first hour of this program. If you were listening then, if not, I'll repeat myself. You have Merrick Garland deploying the Department of Justice and U.S. attorneys and likely FBI agents against people who were, for lack of a better word, just trying to participate at the school board meetings because they were concerned about CRT and about sex assault in Loudoun County and things like that. And the National School Boards Association decides, no, we want the Department of Justice to go after these parents who are complaining about the curriculum in the school. You go back to the late 90s, and there's Elian Gonzalez on an Easter weekend at the home of his family in Miami. And here comes Eric Holder and the FBI SWAT team raiding the house, grabbing the kid. There's very famous photos of this, grabbing the kid and then throwing him back over the sugarcane curtain into the filthy, disgusting clutches of Fidel Castro. Once upon a time, you watched as Janet Reno, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton all orchestrated the hit on the Waco compound that resulted in the deaths of dozens of women and children. Look, the fact of the matter is the Tea Party movement was targeted by no less than the Internal Revenue Service. And alerts went out from the Department of Homeland Security that returning war veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan war were to be monitored as potential terrorists that had become radicalized. This is what government does and does well. Intimidation. And what you have right now is a president in the Oval Office that's very interested in reasserting his power over you. I just think it's awfully interesting that you see this raid on O'Keefe. I'm wondering if there will be a House or a Senate hearing into this to find out what this is about, because to me it reads like somebody trying to chill the freedom of the press and free speech. News Talk, 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. This is Crossing the Streams. Ladies and gentlemen, Bo Thompson joins us. Hello, Bo Thompson.
Hey, speaking of Crossing the Streams, did you see the final Ghostbusters Afterlife trailer yesterday?
I did not.
You need to check it out.
I don't know if I can cross that bridge.
I think you can.
I think I'm drifting into coach's camp.
You can't be doing that. You can't be doing that all day. You got to at least give it a shot. Give the trailer a shot. And I say this, and people may be listening and say, I don't know about this either. Give the trailer a shot. This last one that they just released yesterday,
mm-hmm.
The very last, it's not, you don't even see the person I'm talking about, but it's what you hear.
Oh.
Check it out and then get back to me on that.
Hey, let me ask you a question, because you're obviously a fan of Back to the Future.
I am.
Do you consider Teen Wolf from 1985 sort of like a kissing cousin to Back to the Future?
I consider it a redheaded stepchild.
That's really good, man. So that's, in other words, it's
a terrible movie.
So in other words, it's St. Elmo's Fire to the Breakfast Club.
Well, see, I know, I think those are both, I mean, those are both decent movies. Teen Wolf was totally playing off the height of stardom for Michael J. Fox.
Yes.
And they made it's a movie that sort of, I don't know, I remember it, and I remember when I was a kid thinking it was cool, but now you watch it now. You talk about a movie that doesn't hold up. Oh, my God.
How about Secret of My Success? That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll tell you what. Teen Wolf 1 is an Academy Award movie compared to Teen Wolf 2.
I didn't even know there was a 2.
Teen Wolf 2.
Get out of here.
So bad that they didn't even spell 2 right. They spelled it T-O-O. I get it.
Wow.
And you know who it stars?
No.
One of the first ever starring roles. You know, Michael J. Fox, I'm not messing with, like a sequel to Teen Wolf, but it stars Jason Bateman.
Oh, my gosh. That's like Breakin' and then Breakin' 2. Broke.
The Electric Boogaloo.
Well, Broke. As I always refer to it as Breakin' 2 Broke. Okay. All right. Enough with the nonsense of the 1980s. I will check all it right. out. I will eyeball it. I will definitely.
I pulled you down that road. I'm sorry.
Hey, it's my show, your show. We cross the streams is what we're doing. We're mixing and matching. Did you see this story over at the Observer about the massive number of houses and buildings that have been shot into in the last couple of years?
I did, and I have former CMPD Chief Kerr Putney on my show tomorrow.
So outstanding.
Is just in time to, I'm definitely going to bring this article up because I was reading some of it before I was coming on with you. Yeah, it's one thing to feel like you're, no one wants to feel threatened by gunfire.
For
anywhere,
sure.
But the thought now that there is such an increased chance based on recent events that you could be vulnerable to it just sitting in your house.
Yeah.
That's where we are in 2021, unfortunately, in Charlotte, in certain places, and that's depressing.
Just to kind of front tease it, Gavin Hoff and Jonathan Limehouse at the Observer, since 2017, so 4 years ago, mm-hmm. Charlotte-Mecklenburg police have investigated more than 3,200 cases of people firing into occupied buildings or vehicles. That's insane. That's just straight up insane. I mean, it's so good. I'm looking forward to hearing that from the former chief. That's a big deal. That is a big deal. Oh, by the way, I'm getting a rebuttal from John Stewart to you. I think Teen Wolf was made before Back to the Future, and it was shelved. It was not going to be released until Back to the Future is such a hit. They dug it out and released it. That was John Stewart.
Which may be true, but it doesn't make the movie any better.
Oh, it's terrible. I don't like werewolves. Like I don't like that superhero. That's the one I don't like.
I mean, Michael J. Fox was, like I said, at the height. You could release anything with Michael J. Fox, and it would have been a hit then.
That's a good point.
Which is why the movie was a hit. But again, I'm telling you, don't watch it. But if you don't believe me out there, go look up Teen Wolf 2, and you'll see Jason Bateman. I guarantee you, if you go to his resume, he doesn't include that movie on it.
That's a good point. All right. What about Aaron J. Rodgers? What do we think about Aaron Rodgers? Suddenly, he's kind of being more contrite and mellow, and he's not so snappy like he was last week. What's going on with this?
Well, I think he probably the whole thing was an emotional roller coaster for him. He went on that Pat McAfee show, and the latest comments are again from the Pat McAfee show. But his initial appearance was not on his normal day; it was Friday, and like you and I were talking about, he went on kind of like a 35 to 40 minute diatribe.
Mm-hmm.
There over the weekend, I'm sure you saw that State Farm, they wondered if State Farm was going to drop them as an endorser, and they did not, but apparently they did scale back some on the, the discount double check or whatever, the commercial. With those, and apparently they scaled back on them. And I have no idea whether that made him kind of go, okay, let me take stock and not go back on his beliefs of what he said, because I saw what he said today, which is not retracting what he said. It's saying maybe I'll you know, not, I'll be a little more understated about this going forward.
Okay,
we'll see.
So I'm going to hit you with like a completely left field question. I was going to give you something else, but we can hit that one tomorrow. Here's a left field question for you. So you see Aaron Rodgers endorses State Farm, right?
Right.
And there's some NBA players, obviously. Chris Paul's part of that too, and they're all endorsing different things. Did you see Tom Brady is endorsing Hertz?
No.
Tom Brady is endorsing Hertz.
The rental car company.
Yeah, yeah. But he was. I saw an appearance with him this morning on CNBC because I'm kind of a CNBC addict. Bloomberg News. He's endorsing their EV products because remember, Hertz wanted to do that big deal. They are doing that big deal with Elon Musk and Tesla. And so Brady's position is like, I'm Mr. EV. I want to take care of the environment, all that kind of stuff. To me, it feels like that's coming down a couple of steps off the pedestal to endorse. And I use Hertz when I go out of town. I mean, I use rental car companies all the time. But it's kind of weird for Tom Brady. It's like, Tom Brady, you rent cars? Really? Do you really rent cars, Tom Brady?
Tom Brady should be the guy. Tom Brady should be endorsing like the high-end Mercedes.
Right. Right. He, like what Kobe used to do. Like, you know, stuff overseas. And yeah.
Although in as high demand as rental anything. I mean, look, any used cars, new cars, rental cars, all of them are scarce these days.
Mm-hmm.
So it may just be that they're in such high demand that maybe they can give Tom Brady top dollar.
You think they ever like say to him, they're like, hey, Tom, for another $75 a day, we'll give you the Bugatti. You take the Bugatti out there and take that around town.
Well, you talk about the electric cars. I was talking to my car guy, which I do on Tuesdays, Tom Blocker, today. And there's this story about how they're coming out with an electric Hellcat.
No.
To which I have to give him credit, to which our program director, Mike Schaefer, texted me while we were talking about this, and he said, wouldn't that be a heck cat?
Very well played. Holy cow. All right, so you got Kurt Putney coming up tomorrow on the Big Shoe. Anything else of note that you'd like to share with the class?
You know, we'll start at 5 a.m., and Kurt Putney joins me in the 9 o'clock hour, mm-hmm. but tomorrow, starting at 5 a.m., news, weather, traffic, sports, Jim Zocchi, everything you need to get from point A to point B, wherever that is, and we hope you'll join us when you can.
Brett Winterbull at 8:35, by the way, and I'll have something pithy and witty to say.
Absolutely. That's the focal point of the entire show. Every day, everything fans out from that segment.
This is amazing because the two of us together, we are both the height and the width of the program. So there we
That's
go.
That's right. You're the Hellcat and I'm the Heck Cat or something like that.
Go watch Teen Wolf 9, okay?
Yes. I don't know who that one stars. That's probably, that's probably like Rudy or something.
Rudy, have a great night, man. That's Bo Thompson. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Great to be here with you. So, I got to do this story. I was going to do it with Bo, but I think I need to just do this thing solo just because we have to do a little bit of a deep dive here, okay? How a no-name, quote, idiot gained Trump's trust, rose to power in final White House days. A blanking idiot, young MAGA fanatic, grabbed power in the Trump administration in its final chaotic days, taking counsel from Radio City Rockettes and Dungeons and Dragons. What the heck does that mean? I read those words and I don't know. Okay. With the White House dissolving into disarray and President Donald Trump's final year in office, Johnny McEntee emerged seemingly out of nowhere to become head of the ultra-powerful Presidential Personnel Office, according to the final act of the Trump show. Now, admittedly, this is Jonathan Carl's book. So a bucket of salt. Forget a grain of salt. A bucket of salt. McEntee's job was carrying Trump's luggage on trips, Carl writes in an excerpt. But the Make America Great Again diehard convinced the commander-in-chief that he was the man to ferret out secret never-Trumpers who had infiltrated the White House and soon became what a senior administration official described as deputy president. No, no. And you cannot utter that phrase at all, anywhere, unless you're Mike Pence. Then you could be like, yo, I'm deputy president.
I mean, you're the vice president, but I mean, I could see Mike Pence kind of kidding around being like, hey, I'm deputy president. This guy, 29 years old, he ain't deputy president. He's dip something, but he's not the deputy president. So he's going around telling people what's up. He's a former quarterback for the University of Connecticut. I'm going to withhold judgment because I have somebody that I like very much that is affiliated with the program who is Connecticut connected. So I'm sure he's a perfectly wonderful guy. He filled his office with a bevy of young beauties, hiring what a source called the Rockettes and the Dungeons and Dragons group. His staff included the most beautiful 21-year-old girls you could find, a senior White House official said, and they apparently needed only one qualification for the job. They had to love Trump. One of his aides was a former Rockette who performed in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in Manhattan in 2019. Her resume consisted of a stint as a White House intern and a job as a dance instructor. Got to start somewhere. Yeah. I mean, I'm not judging. McEntee also then hired a 20-year-old conservative Instagram influencer, Cameron Kinsey, as his, quote, external relations director. What is this guy? You know what this guy is? I don't know if I've ever told the story on the air. I think I have told it on the air about my friend in college who had somebody secretly living in his house when and he didn't know it for months until he caught the guy in his house. I know it sounds absurd. I'll do it on a Friday sometime. I'll tell the entire sordid story. But the fact of the matter was, this guy would go to work and the other guy would go in his house and would live in his house until it was almost time for the guy to come back from work. And he had timed it perfectly and things appeared to be out of sorts here and there. But the guy lived in his house. He was a cipher. He was a cipher living in the house. Not as scary as the guy that was living in the ceiling. Remember, there was the guy living in the ceiling? And oh, that was terrible. But this external relations director is like having somebody living. President Trump had somebody living in the White House who thought he was deputy president. Kinsey later said in an interview, only in Trump's America could I go from working in a gym to working in the White House, quote, because that's the American dream. An insider quipped that in addition to the comely young women, the handsome McEntee hired guys who would be absolutely no threat to Johnny in going after the girls. So that's it. Rockettes and the Dungeons and Dragons crowd. So he's got these guys that are all, you know, high-functioning nerds. And, okay, the book claims that Uber Trump loyalist McEntee made his chops playing on Trump's fears about deep state schemers close to home. Some Trump aides privately compared the PPO under McEntee to the East German Stasi. Always on the lookout for traitors within, said the book, set to be released next week. Now, you have got to be, so careful in screening people that come near you. I'll take you behind the curtain for a quick second. So yeah, I worked with Rush, and when I first got hired and I met him and everything, you know, when you first meet him, there's like a few people that are around you when you meet him for the first time because they want to make sure, okay, this guy's not going to lunge or do something crazy. And I remember talking to him, and Kit, his chief of staff, was also in the room in the conversation. And I said to Kit, I'm like, what do you screen people out for their politics, like to come and be on the show? And Rush was adamantly clear. He goes, I don't care what your politics are. I just want you to give 100% on the show. And I, you know, it's a professional environment. And he said, listen, I got a bunch of these web people that are working on my show, and I'm sure that their politics aren't necessarily in line with my politics, but we're doing the show, and it's a great time, and it's a fun time, and all that sort of stuff. So it didn't matter which politics, where he didn't want a bunch of people who agreed and were like, oh, yes, everything you say is genius. He just wanted quality people. Well, obviously, in the White House situation here, this guy's not quality people. He's Dungeons, Dragons, and Rockettes guy. And that's no way to run an operation. You want to have the best possible people around. And Mr. Deputy President, you know, the shame of this book for this guy's done now. Because President Trump is going to be like, this guy? Get him on the phone. He'll call him now and be like, were you the deputy president? What do you mean by that? Did you requisition anything and take it with you when you left? Do you have an armored personnel carrier in your car, in your parking lot? What's going on there? Did you squirrel away some Fort Knox gold? The deputy president needs it. We're going overseas. No, I don't know if Tom Brady with Hurts is the new OJ. Somebody wants to know if that's... I don't know. They didn't get into that. I was watching it on Bloomberg earlier today. And they were talking... But he was talking about the EV vehicles, you know? And, you know, that's his new thing that he's doing. That's what he's doing. He's got it going on. Here's what's interesting about all the stuff that's kind of going on in the country right now. For the first time, and I pay attention very closely to the direction of the country. I pay attention to the government and stuff like that that's going on here. But you know what's really strange? If you watch people and talk to people during the time of the beginning of the pandemic, the fear of the pandemic, the lockdowns and all the kind of stuff that was happening during the pandemic, everybody was focused on pretty much the same thing. Either they were focused on, COVID, like, I don't want to get COVID, I'm afraid of getting COVID, I'm worried about COVID, or they were focusing on the government. They were focusing on Washington, D.C., and what are they doing and all that sort of stuff. You actually, with the challenges we have, inflation, the spending, the stuff that's going on, you're actually seeing people kind of decouple from where they would be. And I think that explains why people are diving into Christmas so much. Like, it's really, this is unconscionably early to be talking about Christmas. I mean, this is the ninth of November. We haven't had Veterans Day yet. We still, what are we? Are we week 8 of the NFL season? 7-8 of the NFL season? So we're just approaching halfway through the NFL season. College football is still happening. Okay? We're not even close to the bowl games yet. Even the Humana Bowl or the Emerald City Bowl or all those sorts of things. And I'm not demeaning any bowls at all, but you understand what I'm saying? There's some smaller bowls and there's some like really big bowls. People, I think, have said, you know what? I can't live and die with the ebbs and flows of what these maniacs are talking about in terms of policy. So I'm going to dive super deep into Christmas and holidays and stuff like that. We, in my neighborhood, there are Christmas lights up. There is stuff that's been set up, and I think it's because people are so hungry for faith, but also they're hungry for hope. They're hungry for waking up in a better way. And it's so crazy to think about a year ago from right now, where we were a year ago, because it was only November 9th a year ago. The election had just happened. They were still fighting at the recounts and this and that and all that sort of stuff. And people were looking and they were so excited. They were going, can't wait till 2021 gets here because everything's going to be fixed. You get the vaccine, the open stuff up. We can go back on vacation. We can do all this sort of stuff. And what did you get? You got a brand new year. People flew into that brand new year. Everything was fun. And then all of a sudden you said, oh, we're still mired. We're still mired in the mess. We're still stuck. We're still in the lockdowns. We're still watching governors tell us what we're not allowed to do. We're still watching city and county and state health directors tell you that you got to wear the mask or you got to follow their rules or else there'll be consequences. So as we move into 2022, think about this. COVID hits us in 2019. Into 2020. So like, let's say, for argument's sake, 2020, January of 2020, COVID starts to hit us. 2020, 2021, we're going to go into our third year of this fight and this malaise. And I think what's going to end up happening here is, as we move into 22, there's going to be a lot more boldness by people asserting their individual rights and liberties because you finally have the opportunity to confront the politicians on a field of your choice, which is an election year. So you're going to start to see, I think, the fear of God put into these politicians, because they've been calling the tune pretty good. And people have pretty much had it. Overall, with the exception of the rioting and the looting and the insurrection, people, I think, have behaved themselves exceptionally well in this country. They have put up with a lot. They've put up with way more than other countries would have put up with. But I think as we get towards 2022, this is the moment at which the Washington, D.C. establishment could actually lose the American people. The American people, at some point, you got to remember, the opposite of following rules and orders and things like that is not disobeying. Where you really strike the government as powerless, whether it's city government, state government, federal government, is when you go to a position of ignoring them. And you just look at them and go, what? I got to wear a mask? Nah. Thanks anyways. And I'm just going to keep walking into the building. That guy's walking into the building. She's walking into the building. They're going here. They're going there. What? I got to have a vaccine passport? Nah, I'm going to the building. We're all going. This is it. You guys have had your chance. You've had your run for the last 3 years with the lockdowns and the shutdowns. And can't go in a bar. And you can only go in a bar at this time. You can't have a drink after 9 o'clock. You can't have a drink between 9 and 10 o'clock. Can't watch the fourth quarter of the football game. Think about the stuff that was done to us. And I know these people were faking it the whole way, just like everybody else, trying to figure out the way to go. But now that we start to clear all of this, these same politicians are going to have to answer questions, because you're now going into either cycle number two of a four-year term, or you're going into cycle number two or three of a two-year term, all that sort of stuff. The American people, I'm not even talking about us here in Charlotte. We are part of it, but the American people have had it. The American people are in full eye roll mode when it comes to Gretchen Whitmer telling you what to do. Or some mayor, or some city council person, or some county commissioner, or some governor telling you that it's got to be like this. You lose the American people, you lose the entire game. I believe, as we stand here, they had one chance to lock us down, to really lock us down, and one chance to restrain what it is we wanted to do and all that sort of stuff. And I don't think you will ever see that happen again. Maybe I'm whistling past the graveyard. I think these politicians know they had their one time to lock it down, and it ain't going to happen again. Even if COVID comes back, roaring back, a derivative of it comes, people are going to say, you know what? You don't get to take my freedom anymore. Think back to World War II in London during the Blitz. Think about the resilience of the English people during that time, when they would go down into the tunnels at night and during the battles over Britain, and then they would come up and they would sweep up and they would clean up and they would rebuild. You never broke their spirit. The one thing that has not been broken in this country is the American spirit. It has not. We may fight, we may fuss, we may go back and forth, but you never broke the American spirit. It was not broken. It was not broken. People were still kind to each other. They were generous with each other. They looked out for their neighbors. But if anything's been broken, is the trust between those in power and those in business, those who want to go to work.